It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Politics, 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 politics.
That's right, I'm back. Politics, politics, politics. Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz. I'm your host. I'm Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show. And this is, well, this is reality checking in. It's been almost a year since my last broadcast. And I got to tell you something, folks. It feels good to be back. To let something off your chest. To get it out of your head. To quiet the voices that are simply saying, why? Why? I mean, there are so many things that have occurred. So many voices silenced, so many lives flushed out, so much waste that has occurred between our government sticking its 2 cents in where it doesn't belong, to the increased security protocols at the airports, to the tragic shooting just 2 weeks ago here in Las Vegas. And where are we? Are we any further afoot? Are we any safer? Well, there's the key, isn't it? There's the question. Are we any better off than we were? Are we in a position that is safer? Or is that just a bill of goods they're trying to sell us while we're looking over here, while again, they're stealing from us over there? Those are the things we're going to think about. Those are the things we're going to talk about. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about safety, but in the realm of the concept of trust but verify, you know, the historical thing that helped Ronald Reagan take down the evil empire, helped America rise from what would have been the ashes of the Cold War, to beat an enemy without firing a shot, to actually find out that the enemy wasn't the enemy, but the government was the enemy. You know, it's really weird when you realize that you're only told to hate people because that's what you're told to do. Well, here's the situation, folks. Sit back, relax, enjoy the ride, and over the next hour, we're going to be talking about trust but verify, and we are going to be talking about the events that transpired here in Las Vegas because that puts reality in perspective. And it's not just a conspiracy theory because I'm not really into those, but I got some questions to ask, and you probably got some too. So, thanks for joining me. Welcome back to the show. And we are going to be regularly on Spreaker.com and carried on Podomatic and Blog Talk on Tuesdays and Fridays, 10:30 a.m. But I'm doing it a little early today because I just couldn't wait anymore. And I hope you appreciate it. We'll be back to you soon. Sit tight. Be good. Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz, host of the Warren Markowitz Show. Catch me every Tuesday and Friday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Spreaker.com to talk about politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle my fancy.
The Warren Markowitz Show. It's his world. You just live in it. The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.
Okay, here we are back. Sorry about that. I lost track of the bumpers. Anyway, listen, guys. I appreciate everybody sticking with me, keeping me up there in the rankings on Podomatic. Listening to my shows and downloading them on Blog Talk and on Spreaker.com. There's been a lot going on. On a professional level, I've been working with a couple of civil rights matters. You know that I'm an attorney and that I keep my 2 cents in generally where it doesn't belong. That's usually what I'm paid to do, but sometimes you wind up doing it just because that's necessary. And there's a matter I've gotten in Missouri. It turns out that Missouri is a hotbed for legal matters, only because it is a what do you call it? It's a smaller state, and when you have a small state, you have a smaller pool of people to draw from, and when you have a small pool to draw from, corruption tends to rise to the top. I'm not saying the state of Missouri is a corrupt and degenerate place. Actually, it's a historically filled place. It's got a lot of interesting people. And I visited there and took a train from Kansas City on one end to St. Louis on the other. And it's Americana. It's what we are grown from. It's the best of us and the worst of us. It really is one of those things. But I just want to let you know that if you are interested in what's happening in one of the civil rights matters, it's a tragic event. Gentleman is languishing in jail. His name is Jeffrey Winehouse. He's known as the Bulletin Man. You can check out, you can check out what's going on at freejeffnow.com. Google Bulletin Man and my name. You'll be able to find out a bunch of things and some updates on YouTube. Also, what we've got planned for the show since we're bringing it back is eventually we are going to rotate from a podcast platform such as this to a YouTube platform. But I'm working on the infrastructure here. It's something that I've been playing with, and I'm looking forward to having some fun, giving some video to this and giving some depth to it. But anyway, welcome back. So let's talk about a topic that is right out in front of us that has less answers than the ones that the news has been filling us with. I'm not really interested in North Korea because what am I going to do about it? It's not my backyard. I can't sit here and worry about whether or not North Korea is going to decide to drop an EMP on us and all of a sudden my broadcast dies, or 90% of the U.S. winds up in darkness. I can't worry about whether or not the dollar is going to collapse because I don't have any influence on it right now. What I can worry about is my own safety, and you can too. Now, there's no surprise to anybody listening to this show that I'm an advocate for, a defender of, in support of the protections of the U.S. Constitution, or our civil rights that are enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. And, of course, the benefits of an armed society. I firmly believe, and I will allow anyone to challenge us, that an armed society is a civil society. If you think about it, it's a very logical conclusion. It's not an issue of whether or not the big guy can beat up the little guy. It's not an issue of whether or not the aggressive little guy can beat up the passive big guy. It's not an issue of whether or not the frail old lady is going to be abused, because you just don't do that, and we know that civilized people don't do that. It's a matter of simple facts. You don't attack a tiger doesn't attack a porcupine because he's going to get hurt. So a predator does not attack prey that is armed. And guys, that's what it boils down to. Security, protection. It's not the police's responsibility. And they've got a big enough job. If you think about what the cops have to do on a regular basis, they've got a big enough job just to make sure that the place doesn't blow itself up, both literally and figuratively. They've got, and listen, I've got issues with police and procedure, and the idea is that sometimes they go too far and sometimes they may not have gone far enough and things go the wrong way. I'm not bashing cops. Let's get something straight. I'm not bashing cops. I'm not bashing civil servants. I'm not bashing firefighters. I'm not bashing anybody. I'm talking about the realities of our world. We have an obligation to ourselves. Whether you live in L.A., New York, or Chicago, whether you're from Miami or Seattle, you have an obligation to yourself and to your family to make sure that when you go to work, you come home. It's really not that complicated, is it? We take it for granted, but the concept is we go to work, we come home, we spend our time with our families, we do the best we can. But the safety, our safety, is our responsibility. We kind of pass along the obligations of making mistakes through the use of insurance. If you think about when we drive your car, you're insured. Why are you insured? You're not insured because of what you're not going to do. You're insured about the things you don't know what's going to happen. So here we are. An armed population is a civil population. Because people who are responsible with themselves and generally responsible with firearms don't go around shooting each other on the streets. Even in the Old West. Even in the Old West, where people still to this day carry weapons on their hip. Big deal. They're not the threat. You get it? Threats don't make themselves known until they're threats. You know, there's this big thing that's going on. I don't know if maybe you missed it over the last couple of years. It's this Bundy trial. Now, they're supposed to go back to trial at the end of this month. And Cliven Bundy and a couple of his, and I think his sons and a couple other people are supposed to go back on trial. The biggest piece of the puzzle here is whether or not you're allowed to protest. Now, this is how I see it. Okay, the court, unfortunately, if you've read some of the things that have been put in the public in the docket and so forth, the court itself is really, I think it's an injustice. I think the court is being abusive because, in my opinion, the court's responsibility, the judge's responsibility, is to make sure that the accused is not convicted, that the accused is given every benefit of the doubt, every opportunity to present their case, every chance to take on the mighty United States government, because if you're in district court in a criminal case, you're talking about the U.S., the resources of the United States government being pushed on the little guy. And it doesn't make a difference if it's for $1 million or $10 million or $1 billion. There's a little disparity there. So you would think that the judge and the court system would work to protect the rights of the individual. But the biggest thing that I see in this whole case is whether or not you have a right to protest while carrying a firearm. Now, mind you, the two things might not be the best of partners, the best of combinations. There may be circumstances where you say to yourself, this might not be a good idea for me to be carrying a gun. On the other hand, if it's a normal thing to have a firearm on you and you protest, what crime are you committing? I'm not trying to delve into this, into the matter. I'm trying to point out a simple fact here. It's the issue of trust but verify. It's the issue of, can I trust my neighbors? Can I trust the people I live around? Can I trust the people I live with? Because that, my friends, is the big question. We develop circumstances of which security is made to look like I'm going to be safe. Give you an example. You go to the airport. You go through a magnetometer. You go through a sniffing machine. Do you know that every time I go through one of those big puffing machines, you know, the ones where you stand and put your hands over your head and they swing, this door swings around you, and then they ask you to step outside because they take this little image of you or this, excuse me. I get patted down. I get patted down in the same places I get patted down. It's not because I'm packing anything. Heaven knows, bad joke. All right, let's move on. I normally carry a weapon. And on a side of my body where I normally carry that weapon is a side of the body that I normally wind up getting patted down on. Doesn't make a difference if I've washed my pants the day before or they've been sitting in my closet for a week or whatnot. That's how sensitive these things are. But they're designed to make us feel like we're being checked. The issue of the x-ray machine, whether our luggage goes through and you can't carry your personal grooming utensils because you can mix the chemicals and make a bump. All these things are made to make us feel like, oh, we're being protected. In reality, the circumstances, it's all that is. And you're wondering where I'm going with this. Well, I'll tell you where I'm going. 2 weeks ago, 20-some-odd thousand people met for a concert in Las Vegas. Tell you the honest truth, it's pretty much a non-event in Las Vegas if 20,000 people showed up for a concert. It's an everyday event. typically happens at least a couple of times a month. This time it was an outdoor venue. And from that, hundreds of people were wounded. Dozens of people were murdered. Plain and simple, outright murdered. From what appears to be at this point in time, a single crazy person. And I say crazy because I don't care what anybody says. The concept of mass murder is not something that an individual with a level head. I didn't say crazy or insane in the legal definition. I'm talking about somebody with a level head. Goes about everyday thinking. People don't just figure out how I'm going to murder 600 people. Or terrorize 20 plus thousand people. There's a reason for it, and that's what's really bugging a lot of us. But here's the thing. Have you ever been to one of these concerts? You got magnetometers you got to go through. You got security levels you got to go through. You got everything that's made to make you feel like you're safe. And 9 times out of 10, other than a bunch of drunks or people just simply misbehaving, you really are. But here we are, an outside venue, and some clown takes a suite at the Mandalay Bay, and from 32 stories up and probably about 1,000 feet across, rains down hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds of ammunition on these helpless people. I mean, we've all tried to walk through the drops of the rain. It's annoying enough when you get blopped on from the water or when it's really coming down heavy. Now imagine it's brass and copper and lead. This guy was out there for murder and mayhem. But why? I mean, we've been told he had 20 plus weapons, 23 weapons. He had bump stocks, what made the guns act or behave as if they were rapid fire or automatic, semi-automatics. I mean, the terms they're trying to bant around and show are just almost abusive at this point because they just don't have any answers. But the biggest questions we have is, there's so much security on a gaming floor. There's so much security that you see and know about when you walk into a casino. Yet we have questions. We have questions that lead us to believe that there is no security in a casino. If you're not the casino's money, they don't give a rat's behind about you. Because here's it. I don't know if you guys know, but about 2 years ago, my wife and I went out for, I think it was her birthday. It might have been her, yeah, I believe it was her birthday. We took our car to Santa Fe Station Casino. And me being a moron and doing something completely stupid, I put the valet ticket in my back pocket. And then, of course, I jammed my cell phone into my back pocket. Somewhere along the night, I took my cell phone out, the ticket came out, and it hit the floor. Now, somebody picks up my parking ticket. Well, guess what they did? They go around, and they take my parking ticket, and I go and get my car, and I drive off with it. I don't know this for a couple hours. But here's what we find out. The casino has videotape of the man picking the ticket up. They have videotape of the man sitting down at a slot machine and putting what they assume to be his player's card. They have video of the man going upstairs to the parking garage and getting into another car, coming down to the valet and actually collecting my car and driving off. You know what their argument is? They're not sure it was him. How's that one for you? They weren't sure if this guy actually took my car or who this guy actually was. So no, folks, my insurance company paid out over $10,000 for repairs for my wife's vehicle. But no one was arrested and no one was prosecuted. Because it wasn't the casino's money. It wasn't the casino's game. So here we are. Let's flash forward now to October of 2017. And we've got this guy who somehow managed to get 23 rather large semi-automatic weapons into his suite at Mandalay Bay. What they claim to be 20,000 plus rounds of ammunition, which, by the way, are, if you've ever bought a box of ammo, is not the lightest thing in the world to move. And he did this over a period of probably 3 days, I think they said. But they have they've shared no video evidence. They haven't told us who else is on that floor. They haven't told us what they've seen of his comings and goings. There's been no questions about whether or not he brought it up in multiple suitcases, one suitcase, multiple people, nothing. And then, of course, the bad guy's dead. They're still trying to figure the timeline out, but they probably figured that part out at this point. Because now the guy who discovered the shooter at or about the time he was beginning to or just before he shot is now disappeared. The single security guard who was actually on that floor is now missing. Now, I'm not trying to paint the picture of a conspiracy, even though conspiracy theorists could have a hell of a time with something like this. I'm asking a question. Where are the answers? Where's the video? Where's the list of photographs of people coming and going off that floor? Because if nothing else, they've got him in the elevator. I mean, how many times have you seen the camera? In old Vegas, you can see the camera in a corner. New Vegas now, you know it's above your head. Folks, question. Because if we don't continue to question, this event is going to lead to problems not for the bad guys, but for the good guys. You know what? I want you to do me a favor. I want you to sit tight. Give me a moment to take a breath. And I will be right back. Thank you.
The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times. The Warren Markowitz Show on Red State Radio, Spreaker, and Podomatic. The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.
All right, if you haven't figured it out, you're listening to The Warren Markowitz Show on Podomatic.com. It's also carried on Spreaker, Blog Talk, and if all things work out well and I get myself back on my feet the way I'm supposed to, maybe I'll wind up on Red State Talk Radio again. I had a good time there. I caught a lot of listeners, and I do appreciate the support. Again, I want to thank everybody who's managed to continue to share my podcast over the last, I think it's 3 years before I stopped. And I'll tell you why I stopped before we get back on topic. In 2016, in the summer of 2016, Conservative Talk Radio lost a very important voice. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, his name is Jerry Doyle. Many of us knew him as Michael Garibaldi from Babylon 5. He did a bunch of voiceovers. I considered him a friend. And Jerry lived here in Vegas about, I don't know, 10 minutes drive time from me. And that's only because if you've ever been to Vegas, especially on the north side of town, you really can't get there from here. I mean, roads dead end in places you didn't expect. And I had been to his home several times. My family's been to his home. Used to hang out with him at Sam's Club or Santa Fe Station or Red Rock, wherever we were playing cards or whatnot. And he died mysteriously. I think they said it was a heart failure or alcohol and heart failure or whatnot. He wasn't in the best of shape as far as I can tell. Matter of fact, the last party we were at his home, he was he was asleep in his own bedroom with a house full of guests, roaming through his kitchen and working on his barbecue and just having a pretty good time. Needless to say, having someone who is able to question authority and question the narrative as cleanly as he did, you know, it impacts people. It really does. And I kind of gave myself some silent time, and then, as we all know, life happens. Things get in the way, issues develop, you kind of get sidetracked. But hopefully, with this situation and this time of the year, a little bit more back, I'll be back on track, and we'll bring a show to you on a regular basis as we're looking forward to. So remember, look for us on Spreaker and on Podomatic, and again on Blog Talk as things carry. And don't forget, I think the RSS feeds for iTunes are still active. We'll be checking these things out as things develop. But Tuesdays and Fridays, 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. So here we are. Question. And that's what it is. The issue is fairly simple. The first words out of, I'm going to say this because I have no choice. The first things out of the Democrats' mouth within hours of the bodies not even being cold and little or nothing known about the shooter or his intentions or his goals or his twisted desires was a firearm ban. Right away, firearm ban. Because, you know, guns are evil. Yeah, guns are evil when you can stand up against somebody who's challenging you. And just in case you happen to be of the ilk that decides to expose themselves to different ideas, and you're listening to this because you either respect me, or you've heard good things about what I have to say or how I think, or the simple fact of the matter is that I actually think. When somebody tells you that an armed population can't stand up to a modern military like the United States government, or like the United States government possesses, I want you to think about the amount of time we've spent in Iraq and the amount of time we've spent in Afghanistan, and think about how many lives have been lost over that period of time. Just as a nod, 16 years. And we're fighting guys with bolt-action weapons, archaic tools from the 1950s, and who live in areas where if you bomb them back to the Stone Age, you'd be advancing their lifestyle. So when somebody says to you that in a small armed population can't stand up to a modern military, kindly ask them to pull their head out of their behind and start looking around, because the facts say something else. Even if you roll the whole idea back to 1775, when the first shots for the American Revolution were fired, then you'll have to recognize that a small, determined band of armed people can turn the tide of the population and the tide of war. Vietnam was the first modern recognition of a small-scale guerrilla insurgency determining its own fate. So stories like Red Dawn and a remake of Red Dawn and modern military history, the last 50 years of military events, will prove you otherwise. And as a side note, if you think guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, and I mean law-abiding citizens, I don't mean criminals, I mean people who have a stake in society, who want society to remain stable, is a threat, you should recognize the simple fact that there's 100 million firearm owners with 300 million firearms in private hands. And I think the last estimate was like 12 trillion rounds of ammunition. So to put it this way, one out of every three people owns a gun in the United States. If we were a problem, I think you'd probably know it. Just thinking out loud there. So Chicago, L.A., some areas of Miami, some areas of New York that have problems with gun violence. Yeah. Guns are involved in the violence. The guns aren't causing the violence. The people are causing the violence. But that's an argument for another day. That's a statement for another time. But I want to talk about, and I still want to talk about, this concept of safety. And the overall arching of trust but verify. Let's look at an airliner. Let's look at an airport. We are basically been reduced to an individual that must comply. Otherwise, we can't fly or travel from New York to Las Vegas, or Miami to Chicago, or Miami and to New York, or Baltimore to New York. I mean, even a simple flight, because some bunch of morons decided one day they're going to turn several airliners into flying weapons. But the reality of the fact is that people do bad things. We recognize that. But people do bad things. Because if you really want to take the ideas of restricting personal rights to increase our protection, you wouldn't be able to make a decision without somebody else's authority. Because that's the only way they can keep the society safe and stable. You see, we're running into massive problems right now with our younger generation. And no, I'm not picking on the millennials because they are snowflakes. I'm not picking on the millennials because they get upset about words. That's a fact. It's a sad fact. Words upset them. The concepts of a democratic republic upset them. The concepts of freedom of speech upsets them because they get upset and they're offended. They don't know how to handle it. Folks, we caused that. One more time. We caused that. We created the circumstances by which our children are afraid of their own shadows. They are afraid because everything we have done was to create an environment that was safe for them. Anybody who grew up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and to most part 80s, think about the stuff you did. Think about how you found your friends. Think about how often you were out of touch with your parents. Right? You had a pocket full of dimes if you had to call home. Otherwise, you were with your mom, with your best friends, or you with the neighbors, or you're in a neighbor's pool. How many parents? Now, I, for one, knew when my mother was looking for me. My mother had the best communications network in town. All she did was step to the front door, open the front door, and at the top of her lungs, call my name. Now, for those of you who know me and those of you who grew up in my neck of the woods, probably heard my mother. Because as a joke goes, one time she yelled at us at the top of her lungs to go to sleep, and every light in Farmingville went out. Because my mother had a voice that could carry. But that's not the whole point. If I didn't hear her, somebody heard her. And because we were socially connected by actually physically being around friends and family, somebody told me, and I knew it was time to go home. Or the streetlights came on, and I knew it was time to go home. My parents didn't panic that I was missing because of that. My parents didn't panic because I was not home. My parents, if you hear that, I'm sorry about that. I can't reach the phone. My parents didn't worry about it. But the problem is we started to create an environment in which, hold on, folks, be right back. Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz, host of the Warren Markowitz Show. Catch me every Tuesday and Friday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific time on Spreaker.com to talk about politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle my fancy. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. Really need to remember to turn off the local phones when I set myself up. But anyway, what I was getting at was today we are connected. We're connected through our cell phones, through Facebook, through Twitter, through Tumblr, through blogs, through anything and everything. Life 360, if you've got that app, you know where your kids are, how fast they're driving, where they're going. I mean, We are monitored, we are identified, we are quantified, we are calculated. We are recording more of our lives. Oh, and if you got these Google and Amazon speakers and Alexas and these doodads and whatnots where you can, Alexa, please order my, order 75,000 dozen of condoms and, oh, don't forget the 5 dozen cases of KY. I mean, they know everything. There's no more secrets. And that's part of our problem. You can't tell your friends what you're thinking because it winds up on social media. And it's not really social. It's just a broadcast platform. Facebook is the greatest advertising gimmick since Disneyland. Think about this. With Facebook, they advertise to us. They know what we want, how often we want it, where we want it. And Disneyland is a retail outlet that says, here, you come here, and you're going to pay more money here than anywhere else that you might be able to find this product, all because it's got a mouse's ears stamped on it somewhere. And we all know people who live and die by how often they get to go visit the mouse. Now, mind you, they got some cool stuff. But it leads us one more time down that path where we have to recognize that the world we live in is the world we have created. You see, I started this whole conversation about trust but verify. That was a concept that Reagan rolled out. Now listen, a lot of people are going to tell you, oh my God, he's, St. Ronald of Reagan. Okay, he's holding up this man. Listen, he was a politician. He was an interesting character. He was colorful. I think he was one of the more colorful presidents because I think he was more real than most. Flawed? Of course he was flawed. He was a man. But here's the thing. He took a chance. They said that only Nixon could go to China. Think about that. 20-something years after Red China was born, Nixon goes to China and opens the door. From the period of China's Cultural Revolution to now, all because somebody took a chance on developing a relationship with a perceived enemy. And I mean perceived. Because to this day, I will argue with anybody whether or not China has actually changed its structure of government. Change what they call it. China is run by the Communist Party. It's run by a communist dictator. He's called the president. He's the head of the Communist Party of China. It's a unitarian government. It's a single form with one person at the top. Now, China used to be an empire with an emperor at the top and his advisors and bureaucrats below him. So does somebody want to explain to me where things have changed? Economically, yeah, I'd say there's been a substantial change in China's economic stance on a world stage. But we learned and helped and developed someone who, in my opinion, is probably a pretty decent, reliable source. And that's a broad term in Asia, because we were able to trust and then verify that they'd behave themselves. So if you ask me, China's not our threat. Russia's not even our threat. We're not threatened. See, this trust but verify concept needs to be reawakened if we want to live in a safe place. Now, safety, by the way, is this concept that you're going to be okay. All right? Safety is a concept that you're going to be okay. And safety is a concept of you being okay is in your head. You could feel safe in New York City on a subway at 3 o'clock in the morning, but not feel safe in downtown New Haven across the street from Yale University in broad daylight. Safety is a feeling. It's a concept. It's an idea that you're going to be okay. You're going to be fine. And that is what we have to teach our kids again. Because these lunatics, they call them snowflakes, and these crazy groups that are developed around them because they're not safe, is an outgrowth of the idea that everything in the world can't hurt you, offend you, upset you, distract you, and just keep going along the lines. We went from go outside and play with your friends to let me call their mother and we'll structure up. We'll set up a play date. We went from go outside and play with your friends, go ride your bike around a corner, come back in a couple hours to, oh, how many friends do you have on Facebook? You know, I think we've all seen the meme that says this is how we found our friends when we're in. This was the social network or how we found our friends when we were kids. There's a pile of bikes in front of somebody's house. How many kids like that know that today? How many kids know there's one house that always, every kid usually winds up at? Either they had a pool, or they had the dad who always threw the barbecue, or they were always doing something, or the mom was the one who baked, and everybody went there. They've lost it because we've taken it away from them. We refuse to trust them and check up on them when we need to. That's where this whole world is going. You know, when we talk about the shooting that event occurred in Vegas, let me share with you something. This is an opinion. Okay, this whole thing, this whole hour is an opinion. Every one of my shows is an opinion. Don't take it for news. Don't take it for anything other than commentary and opinion, because that's what it is. It's mine. You don't like it? Turn it off. If you like it, share it with your friends. Do me a favor. Tell me about it, too. It's simple. Those 22,000 people or 20,000 plus people that went to that concert were safe, because that's how they felt. The environment in which they went to was designed to make them feel safe. Safe from what? Safe from people not having tools or toys inside the environment that would harm them. But you can't keep somebody from doing what this clown did and telling the people across the street and down the block that they're safe from that guy over there. What Stephen Paddock did was absolutely, unquestionably an evil, unrelenting, inexplicable course of action. He snuffed out the lives of dozens. He changed the lives of thousands for reasons we may not know. And if we find out, I'm afraid, and I'll tell you this right now, I'm afraid we're not going to like the answers we get. Because sometimes you get answers, you can't agree with them. You can't wrap your head around them. That's the reason why we still have people claiming that the government took down the buildings in the Twin Towers. There's still a reason why you have conspiracy theories. Because you don't want to recognize that people can be that evil to do the things they did. Now, September 11, 2001 and September and 1993, that was only 8 years apart. In those 8 years, those guys figured out how to actually take those buildings down in a tremendous way. But the whole idea, the whole absolute concept of being able to trust and verify means we have to go back to being responsible for ourselves. Again, there is no way to have protected those people from the guy in that building. Short of an Overwatch is what they were talking about when it afterwards after it came out, when that's a concept of putting snipers on top of buildings. Who wants to live in an environment where every time you take a step, there's a guy with a rifle pointing at something? That's not a free world. Freedom requires responsibility, and freedom requires the ability for you to recognize that things are going to go wrong. And when things go wrong, well, you got to be responsible. You got to be prepared. Boy Scouts, be prepared. There's a reason why Boy Scouts are taught to be prepared. Because if you take a Boy Scout and he's properly trained, you could take him out on a camping trip. He can get lost and he can come back in a couple of days okay. Might be a little dirty, might be a little chilly, possibly a little hungry. But he's not going to be dead. He's going to be prepared because he's taught to be prepared. He's taught to do things. And this is just not survival techniques. Be aware of the environment you're in. You go shopping. Look for the things that don't fit. See, that's where things have gone completely askew. That's where American society today has gone completely off the rails. Now, keep in mind something. I'm not condoning with this conversation, and it's just going to go that way. I'm telling you that now. I'm not condoning the internment of the Japanese in the United States in the 1940s or in World War II. I think that was a disgusting course of action. It's historically accurate. It happened. We know it happened. We know that this government was so afraid of its own people, it started locking them up. And we also know that other governments were so determined about eliminating their own people that they murdered millions of them in a process. Excuse me. But when you walk down an alley, well, not an alley, you walk down a street, if something makes you feel uncomfortable, you cross the street. If something appears wrong, you either remove yourself from the circumstance or you prepare for a problem. It's our responsibility. When I say trust but verify, we must trust in ourselves. Excuse me. And verify the environment around us. That's why I've got such a problem with the fact that we have so little answers about what happened in Vegas on 1 October. I want to know. Let's put it this way. I know for a fact that if I'm playing at a card game at a table, that somebody's watching me, the money, the cards, the people around me. I know for a fact that if I go to an airport, I got to walk through a magnetometer. I got to walk through bomb sniffing dogs. I get my luggage searched. I get this searched, that searched. I also know that somebody somewhere, something's going to get through and there's going to be a problem somewhere. I know that if I go to a concert here in Vegas, I walk through a magnetometer. Know that for a fact because last time I went to a show, I had to leave something in the car. But why is it that we've developed a society that is so hell-bent on being safe that security is not part of the equation? Yes, I asked that question. Because safety and security are two different things. Safety is how I feel. I feel safe. I feel like nothing's going to hurt me. You want to know the feeling of safety? Learn how to properly use and carry a firearm and carry it. You'll feel safe and you'll feel secure. And if people ask you why you carry a gun, tell them a cop is too heavy. Usually keeps them quiet for a couple of minutes. Security, on the other hand, is being able to control the moods, the environments, the people, the circumstances. You're not going to be secure. You get in your car, you feel secure because the car is strong. It's metallic. It's well built. It's got a roll cage. But in reality, you're safe. You're safe from most things. But we're confusing safety and security. We're ignoring the verify part for the trust part. Because when we go to that casino, well, I felt that if you are recording all this material and you got all of this evidence, that somebody would be brought to justice for stealing my car. The excuse was that they didn't steal the car, they had the ticket. That was one side of the equation. The other side of the equation was they weren't able to prove that he actually did what he did. Well, if you take a parking ticket that you know doesn't belong to you and go get a car that you know doesn't belong to you and drive it around for 3 weeks and you know it doesn't belong to you and dump it, guess what? You stole the freaking car. There, my friends, is the problem. That is why we'll never be able to, in reality, deal with the fact that people do stuff that will just simply piss us off. You see, Stephen Paddock, I have a theory. I'll share it with you right after this. I just need to take a breath. So just give it a second. I'll run one or two of the promos, and we will be right back. Sit tight. Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz, host of the Warren Markowitz Show. Catch me every Tuesday and Friday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Spreaker.com to talk about politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle my fancy.
The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it. The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times.
All right, here we go. First, I want to thank you guys for letting me get this off my chest, rant a little bit, and put some things in perspective. I hope you enjoyed, gave some things to think about, and I'm going to leave you with a couple of things. In the last 10 minutes or so, we're going to wrap some things up. Just like as I mentioned before, we are going to be rolling out a video platform. So you'll be able to see my smiling face as we move the podcast into a blog cast, and into a video blog, I should say, a vlog cast. But right now, we're still on Podomatic. We'll be there for the next year. We're on Spreaker, and you'll still be able to find some of the stuff on Blog Talk Radio, the RSS feeds with iTunes and so forth. So please share it, enjoy it, and let everybody know we're back. There's a couple of things going on in this country, and I just want to point out that November 4th has been targeted as a date by a group called Antifa, anti-fascists. And I think on Friday we're going to talk about them in a little bit more detail. But this group is, in effect, a revolutionary communist movement in the United States, which is in and of itself kind of the goofiest thing you can ever consider. Because the last time stuff like this occurred, we're talking about the Weimar Republic in Germany. We're talking about the 19-teens and 20s. The results of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, which became the Soviet Union. The results of the black shirts and brown shirts in Italy. The concepts alone of violence in the streets for politics' purpose is really just upsetting. Because here's the thing. America really is the only place where you can get assholes on the white right and assholes on the left in the same place, have them argue, and probably nobody will get hurt. Somebody's feelings will get upset. Somebody's ideas might get pinged up a little bit. But when the extremes get together, you usually find the guys in the middle, which means anybody else who's left over realizes that, well, I got is two groups of morons that just need to get some steam out and let them go on their merry little way. But this group, Antifa, is called anti-fascist. Now, there's been arguments about whether or not fascism is on the right or fascism is on the left. But you want to know something? It doesn't freaking matter. In my opinion, fascism is to the right of socialism, which happens to be to the right of communism. You get it? If we start the political spectrum on the left, and we have totalitarianistic dictatorships on the left, or anarchy, and then totalitarian dictatorships, and then communism, and then socialism, and then, look, here comes fascism, which means anything to the right of fascism, including Democrats or traditional libertarian, liberal Democrats, Republicans, constitutionalists, and so forth. Everything is to the right. Everything is to the far right because it's to the right of being left. Well, this Antifa movement, this anti-fascist movement, this is communism. This is revolutionary communism. And if you don't, and if you think I'm crazy, and you think I'm just spewing BS because I'm looking to stir the pot, do yourself a favor and look it up. I decided to start tracking and checking in on left-wing websites, and RevCom is one of them. It's the Revolutionary Communist website, and it is the most interesting piece of garbage you will ever read. Because these people have got nothing to blame except for the fact that they need something to blame. The idea of capitalism is being oppressive, the idea of capitalism being unfair, the idea... We've already seen what equality in result will lead to. And if you had ever seen pictures of the Soviet Union, you might say to yourself, really, did that actually happen? Were they actually waiting online for bread? Did they actually wait online for toilet paper? Did they actually wait online for shoes? I was in Moscow in 1989. I was on a school trip when I was going to RIT. I was there to meet people they were called refuseniks. And one of the things we passed was a shoe store. And there was a line around a block like somebody was selling a new iPhone. But they were waiting to see if they had their shoes to fit them. Now I can go back and say, hey, that's in '89. That's 30 years ago. My God. How far off can you want to be? All right, let's go to Venezuela. Anybody paying attention to what's going on down there? The idea of the socialist the Bolivarian Revolution. Venezuela at one point was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. The biggest oil reserves in the world. It made Saudi Arabia look small. Educated population, economically sound. Strong fiscally, responsible and respectable people. They've been reduced to beggars. Years ago, McDonald's ran out of French fries because they couldn't afford the foreign currency to pay for the imports. People are now waiting online for toilet paper. They are starving because they can't get food because the government decided they knew better. Flashback, it's not the first time it's ever happened. Stalin did that with the Ukrainian famine in the 1930s. And now this bus driver they call Maduro, who's running the country, is doing the same thing to Venezuela. The point is this. I think there is a connection somewhere between the radical political left and this clown, Stephen Paddock. And I think when we find out exactly what happened, we're not going to like it. We're not going to appreciate it. It's not going to be fun. It's going to wake us up to a point where there's going to be a problem. And they're calling for a problem to start on November 4th. So do yourself a favor. If you respect your neighbors, if you respect yourself, if you want to protect your family, my suggestion is do something about it. Be prepared. Because the only way you're going to be secure is if you recognize safety is your own responsibility. And my friends, I'm going to leave you with this. No one but you is responsible for your own safety and security. No matter what environment you're in, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter who you're with, you are responsible for yourself. 911 is a great tool to clean up a mess after it occurs. Because 9 times out of 10, they're not around when you need them. Because it's not, they can't be. So, be safe, be secure, and remember, take a word from the wise and trust but verify. And always question the narrative. You'd be surprised what you might find. I'm Warren Markowitz. This is Politically Incorrect on a Warren Markowitz Show. I will see you next time. on Spreaker.com, Podomatic, Blog Talk, and just about everywhere else you can find us on the internet. You have a good day, and thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.